Ray and Tay today. Yes, Sports Radio's on. Talking sports with friends, and you know we got it on. From the NFL to the NBA, MLB and college hoops do it all day. College football, we know who's number one. Understand, on the phones, you know we get it done. So call in 718-664-9098 and we'll give you more. Talking sports.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and we are hyped up on this Monday in July to get ready to bring you some MLB All-Star Preview. Give us a call. We're going to talk about a bunch of things, but give us a call, 718-664-9098, like always. Shoot us your emails, your thoughts, your All-Star memories to rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Tweet at us, Facebook us, like us, YouTube us. We're pretty much everywhere for you. Also, check out the website, rayandtaytoday.com, with a lot of great interviews, a lot of fantastic sports guests. We've been having guests on football and college football and NBA, so you can go back and check that out. Ray, we got a busy show with the MLB, the Wimbledon champs, golf, getting ready for the Open, some NFL shenanigans, and, of course, some more NBA free agency. But, Ray, I have to ask you this. Why is the Major League Baseball All-Star Game probably by far the best ever? I know we're nostalgic, but break it down for the fans. Why is it the best?
Well, you know what's great about baseball is that it might be hokey, right? But every team is represented, and you get a good, feels like you get a good combination of young and old. You got compelling stories. You hear about all these stories about pitchers, you know, pitching on Saturday and pitching on Sunday, and coaches calling each other and being like, you know, is it all right if I use this guy for one inning, and can he face one batter? And so,
right, some guys won't come. Some guys won't be there. We'll talk about that.
Some guys won't be there, but other guys will, like Chris Sale. You know, there was a little Ned Yost action. They were talking, to Robin Ventura about, hey, can Chris Sale pitch and how many pitches and should I have him on a pitch count? So there's a lot of storylines. You know, I think that's what's interesting about baseball in general and then specifically about the All-Star game. Plus, you got the home run derby, so you get hyped up on Monday, and then you actually watch the game on Tuesday. You want to see your guy play 4, 5, 6 innings if he's a starter. But since every team is represented, they got so many guys that need to get some playing time. So it's a fun day. It's a fun 2 days, I should say, Monday and Tuesday. And, you know, it's always fun to sit back and take a break and see these guys in kind of a relaxed atmosphere. So I like it. I like the Monday and Tuesday for MLB. But, you know, you think this one is by far going to be the best one? What's going on? You like the home run derby, the new format? What's on your mind?
Well, I know with the home run derby, they're going to get 5 minutes apiece. Not so focused on that. You know what I think? I just mean compared to the other sports. NBA, they don't play defense to the fourth quarter or halfway through. NFL's a joke. Hockey, they score a lot. They don't play all the way defense. Baseball, and there is something on the line, which we both agree should not be on the line, that the winner determines home field advantage for the World Series, which it should be the best record. But they switched it after the debacle years back. But what I'm interested in, and it's not the same, because remember when we grew up, 70s and 80s, it was always about seeing the American League against the National League because there was no interleague play. So that was always a great storyline. It was fascinating. And it was something that you only saw and envisioned in your dreams and in the World Series and then the All-Star game. Well, now we've got interleague play out of the wazoo. You know, that was started years back, and then now it's, you know, more interleague. But I still believe, you know, and we'll look at the break point, right? Obviously, you know, 162 games. Most teams have played probably about 88 games. But going into this, you know, I want to see Bryce Harper, who potentially could be chasing a triple crown, you know, going up against some of these great American League pitchers. Sonny Gray won't be there, but Chris Sale and King, you know, Felix, or vice versa. You want to see, you know, Miguel Cabrera against some of the National League pitchers who are so, you know, Kershaw's coming now. Obviously, the other great NL arms. This is exciting, you know. And to me, I think it's still about matchups, you know. And you want to know, will the hitters be able to knock one out in Cincinnati, or will the pitchers dominate, you know? So I'm looking forward to that. Are there any players specifically that you're ready to see shine, even though, you know, we've got the four Royals or Donaldson, or do you want to see some of the young pitchers? Who's the one or two guys that you think the fans really want to see, or that you personally want to see?
So it's funny, because usually I want to see the hitters. I want to see the hitters and the big boppers and see what they can do. But this year I'm into the pitchers. I think it's an era that's become a pitching era, and ever since they took steroids out of the game. So there's a couple of plot lines. I mean, I think that your boy Ryan Braun making the team for the first time since his suspension is very interesting. So I want to see that. And I want to see how he's, you know, how he's received in Cincinnati, Milwaukee. You know, he's played there before. Zanke and Dallas Keuchel are named the starting pitchers. So Zach Greinke's pretty unbelievable. But I want to see the dominance of the pitchers. You know, I love hitting, and I love, you know, chicks dig the long ball. But I'd love to see, and baseball would hate this, right? But I'd love to see a 1-0 game or a 2-1 game.
Love it.
I mean, these guys are great. Think about the guys that they have here: Greinke and Keuchel and Scherzer and Sonny Gray, and Chris Sale said he's gonna, you know, the Robin Ventura said he could pitch one inning. So I just want to see great pitching. I just love great pitching, and I think that great pitching, we're in an era of great pitching and kind of mediocre hitting. But it's pretty cool. Let's go down the lineup. You know what? Let me give your thoughts. Let's talk about the starting lineup. So we talked about the starting pitchers, right? We got Zach Greinke and Dallas Keuchel. So we got Houston and the Dodgers represented. So weird to me that Houston's in the American League, but that's another story. So starting lineups in our American League, because you got to admit, we're American League guys, we're Yankee fans, so obviously we love baseball, but first, you know, our first love is the Yankees, so we obviously got a slight bias for the American League. So you got Mike Trout leading off. So you've got
that's MVP. That's right there in a nutshell.
Right, as your first hitter, welcome, Zach Greinke. Your first hitter is Mike Trout, the best player in the game, MVP, and then maybe could have had a claim to two other MVPs.
And Ray, that makes the fans want to tune in right away. First pitch, I mean, that's a colossal matchup.
That's pretty smart.
LA.
So then you have Josh Donaldson, of course, representing the Blue Jays, the number one overall vote-getter in the American League, which is also pretty cool for him, in Toronto to get all those votes.
Right.
Then you have a perennial all-star in Albert Pujols representing the Angels. And you've got your boy also bouncing back from his suspension, Nelson Cruz for PEDs, representing Seattle. And then you've got Lorenzo Big Daddy Kane representing the Kansas City Royals hitting in the fifth slot. You've got probably one of the best all-around players in baseball, still underrated, Adam Jones, playing left for the Baltimore Orioles. You got an up-and-coming catcher, Sal Perez, for the Kansas City Royals. And then you've got another young stud, underrated because he's undersized, Jose Altuve, playing second base and representing the Houston Astros. And then you've got Alcides Escobar playing shortstop and also representing the Kansas City Royals. Young stud, big arm. Not a great hitter, but speed at the bottom of the lineup. So that's the lineup that Zach Greinke is going to face, right? And then Dallas Keuchel is going to face another MVP leading off in Andrew McCutchen, center fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
That's pretty tough.
Then you've got the hot-hitting third baseman, Todd Frazier, for the hometown Cincinnati Royals. And then you've got the runaway MVP right now in the National League, Bryce Harper, in right field representing the Washington Nationals. And then you've got the guy who in any other year would win the MVP is your guy, Paul Goldschmidt, playing first base for the Arizona
Diamondbacks.
He's
in the battle for Triple Crown as well.
Also in the battle for Triple Crown.
Yeah.
And then you've got a former MVP World Series champ, Buster Posey, catching. So catchers, you know, good hitting catchers here in Sal Perez and Buster Posey.
Yeah,
hitting
RBI, doing good.
And then you've got the DH. You've got Rizzo from the Chicago Cubs and his fellow diamond mate Chris Bryant's going to be on, you know, he'll play an interesting role in this game too. Then you've got Johnny Peralta, another ex-PED guy, but bouncing back nicely for the St. Louis Cardinals.
I think people
Cardinals.
Forget that he was a PED guy, you know, honestly. You don't hear that much talk about him.
And then you've got an up-and-coming rookie stud. So you've got one named Chris Bryant, but you got another one that's a little bit under the radar screen, Jock Peterson. If you don't know about Jock,
you better
check
know.
Him out. You better recognize, because he's batting eighth and playing left field representing his L.A. Dodgers. And then you've got the second baseman for the Colorado Rockies, LeMathieu, in the number nine spot, and that's the lineup that Dallas Keuchel's going to face. So of those players, what are you looking for? What's your storyline here?
Well, I want to see Goldie for the D-backs. I wish Stanton was in that starting lineup, you know, in terms of the great bats. But Harper and Trout are driving the media in terms of, like, the two young studs. But I think it's going to be Goldschmidt and Andrew McCutchen to really look for. And you might remember this, but in the, I guess, late 60s, early, going well into the 70s, I think the National League had a run of either 13 in a row or 14 and something crazy. I mean, I know they've won maybe 11 out of 12 or 13 and 14 in a row. And the National League had such a run of dominance. The AL in the 90s or whatever, they won, you know, their pockets of 2-3 in a row. But I think this could be the making. We'll see how it breaks. But just looking at the lineups, I kind of like the National League a little bit better. I wonder if they're going to start another reign of dominance. And
really?
That would be the,
okay.
Yeah, that would be the question to me, because, I mean, listen, when you're talking about Harper and Goldschmidt and some of these guys, Posey, I just think it could be a situation. Now, listen, it's not any slouches over there, but it'll be fascinating to see. And I think with All-Star Games, Ray, as we were talking about before, you know, we remember Dave Parker and Pete Rose running over the catcher and, you know, Joe Morgan and Bo Jackson, these clutch moments and these clutch hits, and Joe Carter, different guys who stole the show and did great, you know, things and great performances. And, of course, A-Rod moving over and everybody giving the standing ovation to Cal Ripken Jr. So I think – I don't know if we're going to have any great moments, because there's nobody, like, retiring this year that's in the game, you know.
Right.
Maybe it would have been different if A-Rod was there, and – we don't know if this is last year or not or whatever, but I think it's going to be a new beginning. That's what I would title this, a new beginning for the young fans, because there's a plethora of great young stars in this game of all ethnic backgrounds, all countries. And, you know, we've got players from the Netherlands, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, America, you know, I mean, so I think in that sense, this baseball needs to build this as the new beginning. And that would be my marketing for this. And I would hype up anywhere from 6 to 10 different names, because there's a, between pitchers and batters, there's a lot of stars. So why don't you tell us who's in the Derby tonight, and then we can make our picks on that. Who's up to bat swinging in the Home Run Derby on ESPN?
So first, let's talk about baseball and how they changed it up a little bit to try and keep
smart.
It sexy.
Yeah, a bit smart.
What do you think about that? I mean, first of all, what do you think about that? I mean, that was all right, because
it was getting too long. And players were getting too tired. So you put a time limit on it. That's a little better. You know, you're not trying to wear guys out. And remember in the past, and really why some guys didn't
want,
right, and some guys didn't want to do it because it was messing up their swings for the second half.
Right, and we still don't love the fact that Bryce Harper, for example, is not doing it because his father's not pitching to him. But, you know, it's like you have the chance to win a triple crown. You're in demand. Let the fans see you. I mean, at the end of the day, it's swinging. You know, it's batting practice. Maybe you're just swinging a little harder than batting practice, but, you know, come on. Give the fans what they want. So I'm a little disappointed in that.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to see what's going on here. You know what else is good? So starting with the participants, I love that Albert Pujols is back. And,
he's
back in the All-Star game, and he's back in the Home Run Derby. Because he could have been like, you know, I've been there, done that. Let me just enjoy this weekend, which, you know, nothing wrong with that. But I love it. I love it. My man Albert Pujols is back in the house. So, all right, so let's talk about the participants here. So you got Albert Pujols. You've got a two-time defending champ, not a defending champ, but a two-time champion in Prince Fielder, who's going for his third title.
And he's back.
Then you've got a young stud in Chris Bryant for the Cubs. Then you've got a starter in Jock Peterson who mashes the ball. I mean, have you seen some of the balls he hits? They're 450,
right. I mean,
460.
On average, he's got the greatest average for distance for home runs this season. So that tells you right there what the kid is doing. He's impressive.
Jock. And then you've got another guy who might be the best all-around player in the game, Manny Machado. I mean, he's a defensive guy. You know, he's just as good on defense as he is on offense.
Great two-way player for the Orioles.
Excellent two-way player. Then you've got Josh Donaldson, again, you know, a stud coming over from Oakland, doing great in Toronto. Then you've got, you know, my lefty. You know I got to go with my lefty. And then you got Anthony Rizzo from the Cubs.
Okay, Rizzo's in there. That's good.
Yeah, and then you got the hometown hero in Todd Frazier. So the opening round is going to be – so they did it 1-8, you know, 2-7, and so forth. So it's Pujols
like
and Bryant.
Okay.
Pujols and Bryant is one matchup. Then you got Peterson Machado. Then you've got Donaldson Rizzo, and then Frazier Fielder.
That's good.
So that's the brackets right there. So let's go predict that for me. So let's go. So you got Pujols and Bryant. Who you got?
I'm going to go with the savvy veteran. He steps up to the moment. So I'll take Pujols there.
I think so, too. I think your first one, you get a little choked up. So Peterson and Machado is the other side of that bracket.
I'm going to go with Jacques.
Okay.
No relation to Jacques.
I'm going to say the same logic for rookies. So I'll go with Manny Machado on that one.
Oh, okay.
Donaldson and Rizzo. That's an interesting matchup.
That's a good one. I'm going to go with Donaldson just because I think he's really an underrated home run hitter, and I think he's ready to step up big for the fans that supported him. I think Rizzo might be pressing to keep up with
his
Chris
Bryant.
You know
what? I'll go with Rizzo on that one. I'll say in Cincinnati the balls will fly out to right. And then you got the hometown guy, Todd Frazier against the Prince Fielder.
I think Prince does this in his sleep. I like Frazier, and I think, you know, if he had any other matchup, he could potentially win. But I think the Prince is back, and he, you know, he's in the running, if you could almost say, not a triple crown, but maybe a double crown. But Prince Fielder's having one heck of a season, could be the AL MVP eventually. Who knows? But I'm going to go with Prince.
Yeah, I agree. I think Todd Frazier's a hometown guy. He's going to put too much pressure on himself. And you know I love me a lefty. So, yeah, I like Fielder. So, wait, so you have Pujols and Peterson, and I have Pujols and Machado. So, who you got, Pujols and Peterson?
I'm going to actually say the endurance goes with the young pup. I think Peterson advances.
Okay. I'll take Pujols. I'll take Pujols over Machado. Machado's a good home run hitter. I think Pujols is just a veteran, knows what he's doing. And then you've got Donaldson against Fielder, and I've got Rizzo against Fielder. So who you got?
I'm actually going with the Prince. the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is back. He's in Texas, and he's going to do it for him and his daddy. Maybe they'll mend their relationship a little bit better. I know it's been back and forth with them. I think Prince Fielder goes up against Jacques, and I actually think Prince wins it all.
Wow. Okay. You know, I'm going to go with Prince Fielder also, and I'm going to say Prince Fielder faces Albert Pujols. So this is one of those old veterans. And you know what? I think he went to the fountain of youth. He's like Ponce de Leon. And I'm going to go with Albert Pujols, who has 26 homers. You know,
let's just hope that fountain is pure. Let's just hope it's a pure fountain.
Well, let's not. That's another episode of Rante today. This episode is just about who wins
the Derby. Checking on you. What's in your fountain?
Oh, my God. Gatorade. It's a Gatorade fountain.
Gatorade, okay.
So,
So before we leave baseball, let's just take a peek at the standings. I mean, obviously, the division leaders, you've got the Yankees, you've got the Royals, you've got the Angels, who have squeaked past Houston. That's in the AL. Then in the NL, the Nats are holding off the Mets. That's been back and forth, you know, a lot of the year. The Cardinals, even though the Pirates are playing great, the Cardinals are just even greater, but the Pirates have narrowed that gap. And the Dodgers. So out of those six, can any of those six division winners from this point, do you see any of them, two things, collapsing and not making the playoffs, or out of the division winners, just those six, do we have a World Series champ?
So, yes,
give me,
and yes.
Give me one of each.
Let me put it this way. I don't think that these six will be the six division winners at the end. I think there'll be some
well, give
some
me one of each. One that would be the champ and one that could miss the playoffs.
Well, keep this in mind. So, most teams have played 89 games or so, 87, yeah, between 87 and 89 games. The largest lead of any of those is 4.5. 4.5 games.
Oh, that's great.
And that's the Dodgers
great.
Over the Giants. But other than that, you know, the Cardinals, even with their outstanding season, are only up 2.5 games. And
because the Pirates are on a run.
Well, the Pirates are on a roll, exactly. And the Houston Astros got caught, right? They've won two of the last 10, and the Angels caught them, but the Angels are only up by half a game. And even the Yankees, our Yankees, are only up by the worst team. The Boston Red Sox went on a little run, and they're 6.5 back, and everybody else is between 3.5 and 4.5 back. So there'll be some turnover. So one team that I think will not make it, ooh, I'm going to get controversial on you. I actually think the Angels are going to pull away from the Astros. So I think the Astros are fighting for a wild card. You know, it's hard to – all right, let me say something that might be a little bit crazy because, you know, those are my Yanks. I actually don't think the Yanks are going to hold on. I think the age is going to take them. Yeah, I hate to say it. And here's the funny thing.
Right.
I don't even know who's going to catch the Yanks because it could be Baltimore. It could be Toronto. I think the Rays ultimately can't hit. So I think that it's going to come back to haunt them.
Remember, the Red Sox just lost Buchholz.
Yes, and the Red Sox. It won't be the Red Sox.
The question is, but Ray, the question is, who makes a deal? Who's making a deal? Because the Reds and the Phillies are going to be sellers. You're talking Hamels, maybe Howard. You're potentially looking at Cueto, maybe Votto or Jay Bruce, some bats,
well, what's
Brandon Phillips.
If you look at these rosters, what's interesting is, or these organizations, what's interesting is the teams that would make the deals are teams like the Yankees, the Dodgers. You know, the Cardinals usually don't make these midseason deals. The Nationals are too, you know, they're too young. They haven't been in enough playoff races to even think about deals, but they didn't make one last year. The Angels, you know, is Artie Moreno going to want to take on more money? I don't know. The Royals don't seem like a team. The Twins, the Rays, they don't seem like teams that would take on payroll and would give up youth for, you know, a win-now mentality. So the Houston Astros, that's a team that really should do it. Are they all in, right? They just fell out of first place. They've been in first place for, what, 2.5, 3 months? And now, you know, are they ready to make a move, or do they deep down in their heart feel like next year is their year? They got a young stud.
Listen, they love their youth, Ray, but I got to be honest, their fans have been starving, and with 49 wins in the AL, they have a legitimate shot, you know, even battling the Twins for the wild card. They're right in the mix, and to me, you got to go get an arm or a bat, probably a bat for them. I think their pitching is pretty good. You know, maybe you get another middle reliever, but the Astros could definitely do something. But I got to ask you this. Two teams in the AL that really have disappointed both of us and collapsed this year, or really three, it's the A's, the Mariners, and the White Sox. Could they, the three of them, be sellers? All of them with 41 wins. You know, really just struggling this year. What are your thoughts on those two organizations?
The A's could definitely be a seller. I mean, the only person safe on that team is probably Sonny Gray. But
Sonny is safe.
Other than that, the A's and Billy Bean would definitely happily sell. I think Seattle really thinks that they've got something, and they really are disappointed, as they should be. So I think they'll chalk this up to bad first season, but we have the tools in place between Seager and Ackley, Robinson Cano, and that pitching staff led by King Felix. I got to think that they're very much confident in their ability to compete in the AL West and even farther than that. So I don't think they're doing anything. So yes for the A's, no for the Mariners, and then the Chicago White Sox. That's an interesting squad right there. I mean, you could see them also kind of trying to talk themselves into the fact that you know, they made a couple free agent moves. They got Abreu last year from Cuba.
Right.
Do they hold pat, or do they just blow this team up?
And throw the Padres in there too, Ray, with 41 wins on the National League side, which we both predicted to win the wild card. They are extremely disappointing. They've had a ton of injuries. But
fired,
you know,
Bud Black.
Yeah, it's been kind of messy in San Diego. So they could be selling. I mean, listen, we could have the deadline's the 31st. You know, then after that, everybody's got to clear waivers. So we'll see. But better believe we'll update the trades and stuff like that. But some big deals I think are coming. I wouldn't be surprised if three or four teams besides the Red Sox and Phillies start selling some guys. So I guess it would just be fascinating who buys. We could be surprised who the buyers are.
Yeah, well, there are going to be a lot of GMs out there itching to pull the trigger. And you're right. I mean, we have buyers and sellers. The one concern I have is that typical buyers are not leading their divisions. You know what I mean? You got a lot of the Astros. They should make a move, but I'm not sure they're ready.
Angels,
the Twins.
Don't sleep on the Yankees and Angels buying and the Dodgers.
Yankees,
I mean,
Angels, and Dodgers.
Street.
It's back
to
New York and L.A. again, the big market.
Exactly.
Team.
Dodgers. People think that the Dodgers will be buying, whether it's Hamels, whether it's Cueto. The Dodgers are lining up for Cueto. So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be fun. I hope everybody enjoys, you know, the whole All-Star festivities and just everything. Ray, we got to keep it moving, and we have to talk about two amazing champions. And we'll start with the women. Wimbledon ended this weekend. And all I can say is 21-6 and Serena. Dominance. What were your thoughts?
You know, when we previewed this, I said Djokovic and Serena. And it wasn't sexy, but I said
both did,
they are about a head and a half above the competition. And Serena, it's funny because Serena had to struggle a little bit in the round of 16, and then she met her sister, and then she had some struggles here and there, so I can't say that this was like the faux, you know, Moses Malone, our 83 Sixers, but she is the class of women's tennis. And it's interesting because she's 33 and Federer's 33, and Federer, we'll talk about him in a sec, but for 33 years old, she is about as good as it gets. and she's won her, you know, she's creeping up there to Steffi Graf territory, and if she stays healthy, she'll pass Steffi Graf. And, you know, in terms of majors, in terms of, you know, maybe next year or the year after, if she can keep this pace up, you hands down have to consider her, you know, the best singles player. And then add to the fact that she's got, what, 20 majors? What, how many
21 majors.
21 majors, sorry, 21 majors. And 12 in doubles. So she's got mainly with her sister in women's doubles, but she's got, I think, two or three in mixed doubles. So she's got 33 major tennis championships. I mean, that's crazy. So only Steffi Graf and Martina Navratilova are in the same league as she. And if she keeps going, you got to think that it's going to be hers all alone. If she
but how
have,
about
you know,
this? If I told you that
longevity.
She's going for the, you know, Grand Slam this year, winning all four majors. But this was something that she was doing 12 and 13 years ago. That's what's so impressive, to be this dominant this long and at this age to still reign supreme over the competition. Right now, I would say, without question, Serena Williams is the best female athlete in sports. I can't even think of anyone that can touch her. And I'm just.
What about my girl,
you know,
Carly Lloyd with the hat trick in the Women's World Cup? No, I'm just kidding. She's awesome. She's great. And
definitely.
Especially think about this in an era where 33 is so over the hill. I mean, look at her sister, who's a really good player. But when she hit 30, you know, all kinds of injuries crept up on her, and it was just, you know, she hasn't won much since. In her 30s, she hasn't won a major. So think about how dominant Serena is at 33. She will have won a Serena Slam, and then if she wins the U.S. Open, which she'll be the prohibitive favorite, she'll win a Grand Slam at 33. Yeah. I mean, take your hat off to Serena, her conditioning,
and you
her
know
skills,
what?
Concentration, her desire, all that.
No, so she's had the injury too. She's just been able to come back bigger, better, stronger, and much faster compared to everybody else. And listen, you know I was rooting for Federer. He played his butt off, but the Joker
really
was just
did.
Too much.
He had a great tournament.
Great.
He could have won this tournament any other year.
Right, you know
Djokovic
I was rooting for him.
He's just too good. He's just too good. He's better, and he's younger, and he's stronger. And he's just a little bit superior at every aspect of the game. And you just saw it. You just saw his youth and his power were just too much. He Roger Federer.
He did. And you see his strength. You see his serve. But what I love, not just the serve, you know, you can bring heat at him, but it's how he responds to the serve. I mean, like his returns, I mean, he sets himself up that – you know, sometimes he's not having too much of a back-and-forth volley. Like, he's incredible. I think the Joker is – it's his time. And honestly, looking at the men, he's going to have a run for a while. If Nadal can't get himself back together, it's going to be, you know, the Joker for the next couple of years just kind of –
well, that's a great point. He's got Andy Murray's number.
Major.
Yeah, he's got Andy Murray's number.
Oh,
now,
he owns Murray.
Stan Wawrinka gave him a hard time and beat him at the French. But other than that hiccup, you know, the Joker is just running wild. You know, I got to think that he'll also be a prohibitive favorite in flushing
metal. I think
Murray
already hit his ceiling, Ray. If you want to be honest, winning in the Olympics, I don't think we're going to see any more majors out of Murray. And that's okay. I think he's maxed out his talent.
He's not an Andy Roddick of Britain.
Yeah, he's a Roddick. He's not an Agassi. He's not a consistent great winner. I think he's definitely hit his ceiling, and I think he's on the way down. He'll get to the semis. He'll get to the quarters, you know, stuff like that, but he's not going to win. And I think the men's game needs some more competition. You know, the women have Azarenka and Na, and they've got a couple of other, you know, Sharapova still around. The women have five or six different women that can still kind of, you know, if Serena slips up and makes, you know, errors, they can pull out. The men, it's really, you know, Federer, if he can get one more. But it's really Nadal, the Joker, and then, you know, the other guy, you know, got in the French. But, you know, who knows if that's a fluke, right? He's got to win, prove it again and win again to show us.
Yeah, Roland Garros is such a unique surface,
right?
Clay.
Yeah. So you can't even judge that properly. We'd have to see if this guy can show up at the U.S. Open. So we'll see. It looks like the Joker and Serena will be the favorites, obviously, going into the U.S. Open. I like to see Nadal and Federer, you know, bang heads with the Joker there. You know, you want to see Venus do good, Mary Sharapova try to push Serena, but I think it will come down to the two of them. Now, we got the Open coming up, and there's a young gentleman from Texas who right now is on such a run. I'd like to see him go to the Open. I still want to call it the British Open, but now it's the Open.
I know,
whatever.
But it's called the Open Championship. Say it right.
They got real arrogant on us, right? Real pompous on
us. They did.
They're like, just so you know, Scotland is the home, okay? So I got to believe Jordan Spieth has got to be the favorite. You know, I love Justin Day and Dustin Johnson, but Rory will be in there too. And you wonder if, you know, he's got an inside track. But how could you not put your chips on Spieth going into the Open?
Yeah, it's hard not to. I mean, this guy won, obviously, the U.S. Open a month ago, and he won the Jordan Deere Classic, the John Deere Classic, in the second playoff hole.
The record, 61, Ray.
I mean, this guy was 20 under for the tournament. He's just, and he's 21 years old. That's the thing. And the problem in golf is, it's like other sports, right? It's a young man's game, except that you need that mental struggle. You know, you need to have been through it. So there is, I mean, there's a physical element first and foremost, but there's a mental element. But this guy is gaining momentum, and he's winning majors. And so even though he's only 21, he's like an old man 21 now because he's having so much success. You tend to – I mean, different games, but you tend to see that Tiger Woods in him. You say, wait a minute, this guy just walks on the course and knows he can beat you and knows he can run away on Sunday
Can I say something pretty bold? This kid is better than Rory. People were ready to crown Rory. Nah, I think it's Spieth. I think Spieth, not that he's, you know, you can't say either of them could be or will be Tiger. You know, everybody's looking for the next Tiger, like they look for the next Jordan, you know. I would say Jordan Spieth, to me, his makeup for consistency and mental toughness, the way he handles the course, I think he's going to leapfrog Rory. I really do.
Wow. Well, you know what? Rory has been tremendously successful early on in his career, but he's also been tremendously inconsistent. So
the
one thing Tiger Woods was, and what Jordan Spieth looks like he is so far, I mean, he's only 21. We haven't seen enough of him, not enough data points. But we know that at 25 or 26, Rory McIlroy is inconsistent. You know,
very
it's
much
one
so.
Thing to towards the end of your career, you know, like a Freddie Couples who was a great golfer but then had back problems, and Phil Mickelson, you know, had that one bugaboo of coming in second, you know, in many of his tournaments, especially, you know, the U.S. Open, but then he finally broke through and won his Masters and so forth. So guys would be up and down, but to be up and down like Rory McIlroy was at 26, you got to think
yourself,
for that. You're too young, man. I mean,
he's a young
you
veteran
be,
now. He should be in cruise control. He really should be.
Well,
he's too shook. He's shook. I think he's a little. He gets a little shook in him. I'm thinking he's ready.
But he'll still come out
it.
And win. I mean, you know, he still might win five more majors in his career.
He has the talent. He has the talent to be there every single tournament. So you know, you don't worry about that. It's to me, it's the little intangibles. And I got to tell you, I mean, people are underestimating. The competition right now is the best it's been in years. I mean, listen, Dustin Johnson and Justin Day and and Fowler. These guys are
Ricky
all
Ricky Fowler,
really,
sure.
They're really good. I mean, you've got six or seven guys that, you know, any given, you know, Sunday can take it home and you know, knock in the victory for the course and win. And Phil's still around, and you never
Bubba
know if Tiger's going to. Yeah, and
yeah, no, there's a lot of guys.
Yeah, Bubba's
under,
got
and think about this. They're all under 30. So you got a lot of guys that, you know, it used to be Tiger versus the field. So even as good as Jordan Spieth is, you got to go with the field. I mean, there's many good golfers out there.
You always take the field nowadays. You have to. No one's shown to put on that crown yet. But, you know, give Jordan some time. I think Spieth, you know, listen, it's going to be hard because, like I said, I mean, Dustin Johnson and Jason Day are going nowhere. They're like, we're right here, dog. You know, so it's going to be fun. A lot of competition, and we'll see how the Open plays out. I'm going to throw my ring in, and we'll talk about it next week. But my prediction is going to be with Spieth. I think Spieth is going to take it. So we'll see how that.
Really? Now I got to go with the field. I got to go another one of those young bucks. I mean, I don't know if it's.
Oh,
if
you
it's
can't
like
take
a
field. Give me a name. Come
no,
on.
No,
man.
I know. Maybe a guy like a.
The prediction.
Like a Lee Westwood or one of those European veterans.
Oh,
you know, like
with,
Ernie Els came up on the scene
right.
years ago.
I like to see Ernie. Ernie's
yeah,
been one of my favorite golfers. I got to say, I like Ernie Els a lot.
I like a European. You know, we said all the Americans. I think a European is going to walk away with the Open Championship.
That's fair. Well, listen, let's take a quick break. Got to rock some beats. We've been denying you of some of the beats and the funk and the rhythms. And we're going to come back strong with a little bit of NFL talk, some news and notes coming around the NFL. And on the 15th is the deadline for people signing their franchise tags. We'll talk about that, too. And we'll finish strong with some more NBA signings, free agency. And, of course, Tay will give you some insight on Summer League. Ray and Tay.
Warm your heart when it gets cold outside.
Focus on your Cowboys. Training camp is starting the 30th, the 31st. Vikings and Steelers, I believe, start the 25th because they play the Hall of Fame game. You know, Canton, Ohio, and all that jazz will be coming up. So we'll love the speeches of the Hall of Famers. But we're going to Dallas with two major issues. Your boy Dez Bryant wants his money. He's going crazy. And how about the NFL commissioner, or really Harold Henderson, taking Greg Hardy from 10-game suspension down to 4 games? I actually think it's good. I don't necessarily love anything about Hardy. Cowboy fans should be considered to be pretty lucky, but because of jurisdiction of the old rules and the new rules, I think 4 games is fair. What are your thoughts about the Hardy issue, and then we'll get into Dez.
So I really have a hard time with this Hardy issue because putting it in the court of reality, you're thinking to yourself, like, what's happening here? If, you know, I guess there's a system and you got to go by the system, but the judge, you know, found him guilty and then suddenly the girlfriend disappears and can't be found and the charges are dropped. And it smells a little fishy to me. But I guess you're bound by what you can prove, and if the, you know, district attorney down there has to, you know, consider this a closed case, then I guess the NFL has to as well, or at least has to abide by that. It was interesting that they went from 10 to 4. You know, I thought they'd chop a couple off, maybe go to 8.
Thought it would be 8. That was my thought.
Yeah, but 10 to 4, that's big, and that's another, I don't want to say slap in the face because he's still got all the power. But Roger Goodell, you know, there may be some checks and balances here with Roger Goodell and the suspensions that he's laying down. So it's interesting, you know, what does this mean for Tom Brady? What does this mean for other future suspensions?
Well, that's the big one, because Brady should be coming down this week. They said, you know, Goodell should rule on it this week. And I would ask you, I mean, honestly, I think Brady will go down to one or two games. What do you think on what's going to happen?
I think so, too, and I think that was all in the cards. So I thought Hardy's 10-game suspension was like a legitimate 10-game suspension and maybe knocked off by a game or two. I think Brady's was a media play by Goodell, knowing that if he gave him one game or two games and it was appealed or it was knocked back, if he gave him zero games and suspended or fined him, it wouldn't be the same. So I think this was a natural, and we both said it, this was a natural 4-2 and try and save face for everybody, for Kraft, for Goodell, for Brady. Everybody gets to claim a little bit of victory here. So
I
think.
But Ray, be honest, Brady might not stop there. And that's the one thing that you don't know if Kraft or, you know, who's going to say, listen, Tom, don't fight it. But you got the feeling that the way Tom is coming at it, and they say, you know, what happened in the room, that he kind of was really spieling the same thing, you know, that I don't know nothing, it wasn't me. I wonder if he's going to accept one or two games. That's what you got to worry about. Could this go to the courts all the way through the preseason?
It's quite possible. It's quite possible. So we'll have to wait and see. We'll probably see this.
That's the question.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what to think about Tom Brady. The hard truth of the fact is that maybe he'll fight to the end for his reputation, because he's got 4 Super Bowls. He's got his MVPs, right? So at this point, he's working on his legacy. So maybe he'll fight to the death, you know, Alexander Hamilton style. And it won't be about. Most of these guys are about the money, right? Especially when you're early on in your career and you start seeing hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars.
Everything's legacy for him now. He's got
disappear.
The rings and the money.
Not only does he have his own money, but Giselle makes more money than he does. So,
but she's retired. She's not retired. So.
Yeah, but they've got that money in the bank. You know, Giselle for many years was making more than he was. So,
I know she was.
Money's not the issue. So if this guy really wants to protect his reputation and is really willing to swing hard for that, you're right. This might not go away so easily. So, but the NFL season starts in September with or without Tom Brady. So we'll see how that plays out. But it'll be interesting to see what happens this week.
I tell you
it'll
this, the NFL does
step.
Not want a court battle going through the whole, you know, Hall of Fame and preseason. That would be so ugly. I bet they knock it to one game and tell Tom, come on, just do this one game. You'll be back week 2. And you know what I mean? I don't know. We'll see.
Almost like pleading no contest. No, I agree. But then again, by the same token, Tom Brady doesn't want all of his emails and his texts and everything being public record either.
Yeah. No. I mean, listen, it's the whole thing was a mess. And I really got to say it's his fault the way it all went down. He was probably worried that because of everybody being so sensitive, if he had kind of told a 50 to 100% truth then, that he could have been, you know, maybe potentially missing the Super Bowl. So I think that's why he kind of didn't say anything. And then his kind of response and answer, the way he came out, like, well, I don't think I'm a cheater. What the hell is – I've never once said in my life playing any sports – and you know how competitive your boy Tay is. I've never once said, I don't think I'm a cheater. No, you either cheat or you don't cheat, and you know if you do or you don't. Stop it. That's insane, and I don't accept that. So
that's like what he said about Andy Pettit. That's like Roger Clemens and Andy Pettit,
yeah.
Right?
What did he say? I misremembered?
Misremembered, yeah. I got to talk to Merriam-Webster about that, misremembering.
Yeah. This has got to go in the Oxford Dictionary, you know? So – what's up with Dez? They're saying they're saying there might be collusion. AJ Green kind of came out and said, look, after this season, I'm expecting a contract. Demarius hasn't signed. You know, everybody wants close to Megatron money, almost $16 million a year. I think most of these teams are trying to get the receivers, even Julio Jones, to take more than 30, like around 13. Will there be middle ground? Will it be 14-5, 14-8? I don't know, but Dez is saying, I'll miss a game, I'll miss training camp. I'm pissed. What's going to happen with your Cowboys?
So I don't know if there is or is not overt collusion, above-ground collusion. But I do know this, that if you look back in the recent era, there are some star wide receivers in the NFL, no doubt. More than half of them, a large majority of them, are also divas. So that's something that the owners are trying to, you know, get around or squash.
But I wouldn't say that for Julio and A.J. Green.
I didn't say all of them, half of them.
Okay.
Let's say 50-50. And the other thing to recognize that the owners are going to push back on is to say, look at the last couple years' champions. The Seattle Seahawks could be the two-time defending champs, right, if it wasn't for that great play in the end zone with the interception and everything.
Not even close to a Pro Bowl receiver.
Not exactly. You're talking about they got rid of the only person that actually put any fear into anybody, right? And that was your boy from Florida.
Percy Harvin.
So they basically win 1.5 Super Bowls. The New England Patriots basically have a monster in Gronkowski, who also isn't healthy on a regular basis, but they have a monster in Gronkowski, and their wide receivers are just average. I mean, Julian Edelman, you know, and Danny Amendola aren't striking fear in you either. So I think the owners are thinking, wait a minute, we'll invest in a quarterback, we'll invest in a left tackle, we'll build an offensive line, we'll get ourselves a defensive end pass rusher, we'll invest in corners. I'm not sure they want to invest $16 million or $14 million even in a Calvin Johnson, you know, especially given that look at the last few Super Bowl winners. So is there direct collusion? I don't know. I think the owners are probably smarter than that. But is there a little bit of a hush-hush? And I don't know if it's just signaling by one owner and them basically saying, look, I don't want to be the guy that breaks and signs the next $15 million, you know, receiver who gets injured or doesn't deliver. So, you know, collusion's a serious charge and it takes, you know, several parties to tango here. But I do think that they're pushing back on these receivers. And they're saying, I don't know that I want to pay this much for wide receivers.
And I don't necessarily blame them because the position is deeper than ever, i.e. just look at last year's draft class where you had about 11 or 13 guys who were productive day one, and then this year's draft class, which potentially, even when Charles Davis was on our show with, you know, guys like, you know, even from Alabama, unsigned, undrafted players probably getting deals, that this could be, you know, another great wide receiver class. So if I'm getting depth in the third and fourth round for receivers like running backs, why would I overpay for that position? But at the same time, I got to say this. You do – I mean, even though – look, the Seahawks are special the way they've won. Remember, the Broncos were there and the Patriots were there too the last 2 years, and they've had some serious, you know, wide receivers. Not so much the Broncos, I mean, not so much the Patriots, but like you said, they did have Gronk, and Gronk is considered to be serious, you know, in any way, shape, or form you want to call it, but he's a tight end, but it's like having a Jimmy Graham. So this will be the first time Seattle's put money into the position for any type of pass catching, and that's with the tight end. I'd be really interested to see how this is going to play out because, to me, I'm not losing a Julio Jones. And the Cowboys already gave up DeMarco.
Yeah.
And come on, you know, if you give up DeMarco, there's no way in heck you could give up Dez Bryant. Dez might be the heart and soul of that team.
What about Terrence Williams and Cole Beasley? Be easy.
Let me tell you something. Be easy, but let me tell you something about those two gentlemen. Without Dez, they are a plain old sandwich. They are just
I hear you. No, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. And, you know, everybody's getting older on that team, and Dez is dynamic. He's young. He, you know, is a hot-headed at times, but it feels like he wants to win, right? He's not hot-headed, like, look at me, look at me,
no,
look
he's
at me.
Not, yeah, he's all about winning. He's like Michael
Irvin.
He's
hot-headed,
you know?
Because he thinks he needs to get the ball in every single play, and he wants to do everything he can to help the team. So you'll live with that one, and I think the Cowboys will come to a deal. They have to. Jason Witten's not a playmaker anymore, and they really need that for Tony Romo and his sanity and his safety and his security and his success.
Yeah. So listen, let's end with some NBA talk. Obviously, the DeAndre Jordan stuff went the way it did. Cuban didn't accept the apology. But the Clippers with Jordan, Wesley Johnson, Lance Stephenson, and Paul Pierce, they're right up there with the Spurs as being the favorite. You know, Canter, they matched the Portland Blazers, Trailblazers offer, OKC. So the West is loaded again. But this is my question for you, because if you start to look at the top seven in the West, and Portland and Dallas will be a little bit weaker this year, and Sacramento will be better, the Suns could be better. But then compare. Let's talk about the East, because I threw this out there on Twitter. Is the East closing the gap? Or are they just as good or potentially better? Not overall, but maybe the top 5 to 7 teams, when you consider, obviously, the big three, Cavs, Bulls, Heat, throwing Toronto and Washington, that 5. And then now you've got Milwaukee. And let me ask you, what do you think about what the Pacers are doing? People are sleeping, and I think the Pacers are retooling quickly. They're getting rid of that big, slow size in West Coast and Hibbert. But then with George, they bring in Monte Ellis. They're, you know, Miles Turner and Joe Young just signed a contract, Pac-12 Player of the Year. They signed Jordan Hill. What do you think about the Pacers as a 7th seed and their rise and rebuilding quickly in strength?
So, and by the way, Paul George says he wants to play in the Olympics in Rio next year, and he's ready to roll, and he doesn't care that he got injured last year. He said Larry Bird on board with that. So
that's great.
That's true, but good for him.
Yeah.
That means he's not scared to play. That means he's not scared of re-injuring himself, so that's awesome. I still think the West is just miles ahead of the East. Miles ahead of the East. I mean, I can't even tell you that, you know, other than you can look at it by team, you can look at it by best players in the league. You know, Wade is getting older. Paul George is coming back from a pretty serious injury. Derrick Rose is never going to be the same. So in the East, you're really looking at those teams, but individually you're looking at LeBron as being kind of the anchor for the East, whereas, you know, I think the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth best players behind LeBron are all in the West. And they're leading their teams, and those teams are deeper, and those teams are better. So your first question was, is the East catching up? I don't think so. I think the West is pulling away. Now, in terms of specifically the Pacers, you know, maybe they realized that, what was it, 3 years ago? When they had a chance, that was it. That was their chance to beat the then Heat, and they had a chance. They lost game 6. And then it went on to lose game 7. But that was their chance to beat, you know, to beat the king, you got to, the literal king and the LeBron James king, you know, you got to put a dagger in his heart. And they didn't do that. And they had their chance. And then they got old and they got slow. And so they figured Hibbert and the West, they've got to go. And we got to retool around our young stud in Paul George. Hope he gets healthy. And we'll see. We'll see. It's an interesting little science experiment, because it's hard to go from big to small overnight. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
But
they're fine.
I think you're sleeping on the East. I'm going to tell you what I mentioned. Charlotte, Detroit. I think Brooklyn's retooling. I like what Brooklyn's done.
Those teams are not even the top 10 in the West. Top 12, maybe. I mean, the West is so much better. It's hard.
To me, Atlanta and Charlotta are just as good and better than the Phoenix. And Portland and Dallas are not going to be as good. Zaza Pachulia is not Tyson Chandler or DeAndre Jordan. And D. Will coming over there. And they lose Monte Ellis. Dirk can't score like he used to. So Dallas, Portland, that's two teams in the West that were in the playoffs.
Yeah, but they're probably the 9th and 10th best team in that conference. And they're still a playoff team for sure in the East, both of them.
but that's fair. I think. Watch. You'll see. Milwaukee. I like what they've done. I think Detroit getting Ilyasova and Stanley Johnson looks like a monster. By the way, just real quick, summer league. The Knicks and Lakers are coming on tonight at 8:30. Knicks have been looking good. Porzingis looked okay. Jerry Grant looked really nice. D'Angelo Russell's struggling. Okafor looks good. Stanley Johnson looks like a man-child. We might be writing apology letters to him. I really love it. I was turning Joseph Young for the Pacers. So some interesting cats in summer league. I'm hyped up. Ray's still a non-believer. A lot of people are disagreeing. I think the Miami Heat are ridiculous, signing Gerald Green, Amari Stoudemire, and Justice Winslow. McRoberts comes back. I think Heat will be fine. Bosch and Wade will play enough and be healthy. So you better watch Miami. Pat Riley's coming for the King. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And Detroit and Boston are looking at making a deal. Boston and the Nuggets. Gallinari might be coming to the Celtics. Jameer Nelson, so looks like Ty Lawson might be really out the door with Emmanuel Mudiay, who's getting busy. They might have overlooked him. He could be the next John Wall the way he's looking. 19-10 the other night. Just a little update. Let you know how guys are balling. I'm watching some summer league for you.
That's right. Tay is our scout.
Tay is going to tell
you who's filling out the bench. But anyway, let's focus on baseball tonight and tomorrow. So you got the Prince. We talked about the King in basketball. You got the Prince tonight winning it all. I got the old head in Albert Pujols, former best player in baseball, winning the home run derby. Who you got tomorrow night winning the
I'll tell you this.
The game?
I'm going to go NL wins 3-2. Bryce Harper hit the two-run homer. He makes a statement that he's the new kid on the block. He wins MVP. NL beats the AL, and I hate to say it, but they win 3-2.
Okay. I'm going to go with the American League. I'll say they'll score a few more runs than that. I'll say it'd be a 5-3 game. I like the best player in the game in Mike Trout, even though he's hitting leadoff, to get on base three times, to score three runs, and really prove why he is, one of the young studs in baseball. So I like the American League just a little bit on tomorrow night.
Well, it sounds like fun. It's going to be a great sports week. Join us next Monday. We'll really be getting into NFL training camp. And we're going to have a Super Bowl winner from the Denver Broncos joining us, Tom Rowan, former punter for the Broncos. He played with the Seahawks, Giants, Steelers, but 13 years veteran in the NFL and a Super Bowl champion. He was with Elway and Schlereth and all those guys in 98 and 99. So Tom Rowan will be joining the show for you Bronco fans. He's a Colorado Buffalo too, right? So that'd be kind of fun. And we'll be getting ready to start to talk some more football. We'll update the Open and the World All-Star Game and second half of the season and all that good stuff. So thanks for listening.
We're out.
Great for